The Media Education Lab has been Renee Hobbs's way of linking her academic work to the rest of the world.
Welcome to the Media Ed Podcast, celebrating the 20th anniversary of the Media Education Lab. I'm your host, the executive director of the lab, Yonti Friesen. In this podcast, I talked with lab members and colleagues about their experiences with the lab. Today, I'm thrilled to share my conversation with Faith Rogo of InsidersEducation.com. When I spoke to Faith 2 years ago, I asked her to reflect on her history of working with Renee Hobbs and the Media Education Lab. So when did you start working with Renee? What was the circumstance that you first met Renee?
So I first met Renee before the Media Education Lab existed at a media literacy conference at Appalachian State that David Considine had convened. I was in the 90s, so a while ago. I had left academe and was just beginning to kind of try to connect to what I perceived as an existing media literacy education community, because that's where my work was taking me. I was working a lot in children's media and educational media and the world of PBS, and first met Renee at that first conference, and she was typical Renee, the kind of social convener. And eventually, as she and Liz Toman had begun to actually think, you know, this needs to be more than just a conference or two every now and then that maybe gets convened and maybe doesn't. As part of that, I was recruited by her to be part of the first board that would figure out how to make this an established thing that people could easily connect to, really founding a membership organization and having that be a national presence. And we've been working together ever since.
And you became the president of that organization also.
I did get roped into being president, the founding president of what was then AMLA and is now NAMLY.
Well, it's a huge contribution, so.
Okay. But one of the stories that I'll share is that one of the things that I did as president was I really wanted to recognize the unique role that Renee and Liz Toman played in this convening and in establishing something that could be lasting for media literacy education in the United States. And I gave them each a print, which I also have a print of. So the three of us had it. And it's a print that says, if we fail this time, it will be a failure of imagination. And then it's a character that, and then she put the world into my hands. So it was my way of saying, we have amazing possibilities here. And there were a lot of people who were around saying we couldn't do it. It wouldn't work. You know, this wasn't going to happen, or it would happen and then flame out. And I wanted to be really clear that I didn't think that that was true. And that one of the reasons that I didn't think it was true was because of the power and the energy and the foresight of these two women.
Can you describe how the work that you did with Renee impacted you personally and professionally?
Renee has on occasion kind of served as my battery, if that makes sense. That when I needed a charge, you know, when that Renee was there, and it wasn't so much, you know, a coach giving a pep talk kind of charge. It was just getting to bask in the glow of her energy for this work and reminder to myself of how important this all is and that we're doing great stuff and interesting things and intellectually stimulating things. So for me personally, just Renee's energy for this has always been a really important touchstone. Professionally, I think one of the things that Renee has contributed to the field has been the insistence on not shoving emotion to the side. In academe, so much of the messaging is about, no, this has to be objective, or you have to have critical distance. Right. And Renee, who is very much an academic and has pretty high academic standards, was still very insistent that, yeah, but people are people. And they react in all sorts of ways. And in addition to that, it goes along with the communications theories that we've all been operating with. I mean, if we think about that, we all believe that media effects and interpretation are a two-way street, that there is an audience role in terms of message that gets taken away, then you have to acknowledge, well, those are people, and it's not just about cognitively what they're processing from their messaging. It's also about how it's affecting them emotionally. And then I think the really brilliant thing that she has done over the years is to say, so what does that mean, not only for what we say about media and our relationship with media, but what does it mean for teaching? And how do we incorporate that into our understanding of ourselves as teachers and as we plan and lead communities, whether that's the community of a classroom or broader communities of learners together, that has always been that relationship part of it. Really important and not to be apologized for.
How did that impact like others and transfer like into other people, like in your life or communities you work with?
I am a very cognitively based person, shall we say. I very much like analyzing information and synthesizing information and doing logical analysis and reason. And so critical thinking for me for a very, very long time was very much in the thinking part of things. I don't think I would have been able to do the work that I now do in early childhood had I not been able to integrate that added perspective of emotion and relationship into that work. It certainly has influenced the tone of my work and my ability to see beyond the traditional audiences that we were addressing in the early years. So that's a very, I think, specific impact on my own work and thinking about how we do this field. In terms of kind of general, not just my own kind of scope of work, one of the things that I am most amazed by in terms of the Media Education Lab is how remarkable a recasting it is of academic life. And I think people don't appreciate that for it. I often look at structures of things and processes. And so I look at the Media Education Lab and I think, all right, most academics who found their own kind of centers, whatever that it is, to promote their own work. And they expect that people who are affiliated with the center will do so in one way or another to promote that work, that perspective, right? So there's an implicit kind of endorsement and agreement of that work in the way most academics who found centers do that. Renee didn't do that. Renee invited in a lot of people, including me, who didn't always agree with what she said, who didn't always agree with her approach, or who challenged certain parts of her approach. I think we have a core agreement on what this work is about, and we wouldn't be able to all work together in community if we didn't share some of a core. But there's also a great divergence of expertise and opinion that when Renee has been able to bring in that I think wouldn't have been possible had she stuck with that original academic vision of this is just a chance for me to promote my academic work. I think the emotions is another part of it, that kind of acknowledgement and applying it to teaching. I know when I was being trained as a PhD, I was specifically warned off that kind of thing. It's like, keep your critical distance or people won't think you're credible. or you'll get in trouble. You'll have relationships, and I don't mean sexual. I mean relationships with students, and it'll get messy, and it'll, you know, and it's like everything that I thought about good teaching, they wanted to take away, so, which is one of the reasons I left academe. And Renee has been able to stay in academe and figure out a way to still be that kind of person who values those things. I think the way that she's been able to use the Media Education Lab to provide a conduit between people in the United States who are doing media literacy and people in the rest of the world who are doing media literacy, to figure out how we can talk with one another, even though educational systems are often very different in different places. I think that's a great value. But I really, in all of this, really appreciate how different it is from what a traditional academic has done without giving up academic rigor, for lack of a better term, right? Without making it a non-academic pursuit. It is still academic pursuit. And I really appreciate that. It still emphasizes research. I appreciate that. The end result, I think, is a pretty remarkable organization.
Yeah, obviously I agree, but thank you. And
I will add this. I think the other thing is, and this is another way of kind of shifting what traditional academe would require, which is to shift from talking about things in theoretical constructions to transform that into real world application and then doing it, right? Especially in the research community, the whole thing is, no, actually, if you apply it, then your research is somehow not valid. You don't have enough objectivity, quote unquote, or critical distance to, you know, be a solid researcher. And in media literacy, what that meant at one point in time was, so you had lots of media literacy stuff coming out of the field of communications and communications scholars who thought this was really important to introduce into schools and who had never themselves set foot as a teacher in a, you know, middle school or high school classroom. They knew college teaching, and I'm sure they remembered enough from their own educational experiences to maybe make it apply reasonably well in some circumstances, but they didn't understand schools. They didn't understand the structure of schools and how you make change working with teachers and librarians and administrators, and they weren't interested in doing any of that. And Renee, because she sought for those real world connections, found ways to do just that, to do that transformation. And, you know, early on, I think a lot of this stuff came from Renee's instinct about what good education is, about the importance of this work. And I think the field has benefited greatly from the fact that her instincts have been good for the field.
That's it for today's episode. I want to give thanks to my guest, Faith Rogo of InsidersEducation.com, for sharing her thoughts and her valuable contribution to media literacy education. Our soundtracks is Vera's Song, composed and produced by Victor Lundberg. Please join us for the next episode of the Media Ed Podcast as we continue to celebrate the work of the Media Education Lab and envision its future. Until then, this is Yonti Friesen reminding you to use your media literacy power thoughtfully, kindly, and wisely.